on? Are we live?
Yep.
Yeah, you got little thumbs? Okay, so this is really difficult stuff, you know, this tzaras business. Finding like practical lessons and inspiration from this paranormal skin condition that we haven't seen in more than 2,000 years. But Torah it is, and lessons must be learned. So today we're going to continue very much along the lines of what we learned yesterday. Yesterday I called the breaking ball, so today will be breaking ball two. And we're going to learn more lessons from these lesions. So I hope that everybody remembers what we learned yesterday, right? About the balding and about the different kind of lesions that come to a person. I'm going to direct you to Shlishi Kishein Mechubarim. Today's Tuesday, so we're going to begin the third reading when Parshiot, Tazria, and Metzora are conjoined, like this year. Chapter 13, verse 40. A brief recap. Yesterday we learned that there are essentially two kinds of different lesions. There's lesions on exposed skin, and then there's lesions on covered skin. Exposed skin means the skin that does not have an abundance of hair in it, which is most of the body. And then there is the lesions that can appear on the area where the body is usually covered with hair. And what we refer to was the head and the beard. Right? The head would be for both males and females respectively, and the beard, at least according to most opinions, would be for the male. Now, what happens if the area which is usually covered with hair all of a sudden is no longer covered with hair? This is also known as baldness. What happens when you go bald? Does that area of the body, does the head of the bald person return to its former condition? Which means, is it now susceptible to negoyim or to nisakim? Reminder, nega is the terminology that's used for a lesion that appears on exposed skin. Netek is the terminology that's used for a lesion that appears on the covered skin, the area which is usually covered with hair. So if a person goes bald in the area of baldness, do we return to negoyim or does it remain in the arena of nisakim? Does that make sense? Yeah? Clear? Okay. Verse 40. The ishki yimareit reishai. A person, I'll translate this just as going bald, because that's the easiest way to translate it. And his hair becomes stripped, of head becomes stripped. So, the Torah says, kereachu, he's a kereach. Toiru, he's pure. What does that mean? Does that mean that tzaras can no longer apply to the bald person altogether? No, most definitely not. Because only two verses later, in verse 42, it's going to speak of so we're soon going to talk about the karachas and gabachas, and you'll soon hear it. Those are two different kinds of people who could suffer from baldness. And we are going to talk about a nega. We are going to talk about the different kind of lesions. So this is not to say that a person who's bald cannot suffer from tzaras. What it could say is, it means toher hu mitumas misokin. The concept of netek, which is the unique kind of lesion that applies only to the part of the body that's covered with hair, namely the head or the beard. When a person goes bald, then that part of the body is no longer considered susceptible to netek, but instead it goes back to the previous, or not to the previous really, but to where everything else is, the rest of the body is, which is susceptible to nega. Nega is exposed skin. Netek is the covered skin. The area where the hair was susceptible to nitzakim, to nesek. And now, when a person, v'ishki yimaret reishai, when a person, his head is stripped of hair, you're soon going to hear, we're going to talk. Be talking here about the back of the head, because the next pasuk is speaking about a person who goes bald in the front, at his temples, or at the crown of his head. So that tells us that this kereachu has to be a very unusual looking guy. This is a baldness, the back of the head only. Very rare. Somebody would have hair in the front, but be stripped of hair in the back of his head. So that, in Hebrew, that's called a kereach. Now, in Ivrit, kereach is a person who's bald. But in biblical Hebrew, kerech is a person who loses the hair in the back of his head, and gabeach is a person who loses the hair in the front of his head, which is the typical baldness that we're familiar with. At any rate, the point Rashi makes is that it says kereachu, he's a kereach, toiru, he's toir. That means he's toir. It means nisokim, it means saras can no longer apply. No, says Rashi, toiru mitumas nisokin. He is cleansed, he is purified from the possibility of tumas nisokin. In other words, einei nidoin b'simonei roish v'zokon. The bald area will no longer be considered covered with hair. When it's covered with hair, it had a special kind of ritual impurity, which meant, as we learned yesterday, that if the hair suddenly falls out, what is that a sign of? Tzoras. So we would think then, if there's an area that is covered with hair and the hair falls out, and that's called tzoras, that the person who's bald is one big mitzvah, because the hair fell out, and then tzoras is applicable today, because there are people who had hair in the head and don't have hair in the head anymore. And once they lose the hair in the head, oh, that's nesek. That's a form of tzoras. No, 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 Rashi says. It only works when it's covered with hair as usual. Then suddenly a clump of hair falls out, then that would be a nesek. But if a person goes bald altogether, which is so that is to say, if is yom is yimorei treisha, if the head is stripped of hair, so then eini nidan b'simanei reish v'zaken, then the signs, the telltale signs which are applicable to the areas of the body, to the skin which is covered with hair, which is the head and the beard, because that's usually a place of hair, so that's why the sudden lack of hair would be construed as a sign of ritual impurity. But this person who lost that hair altogether, rather, here that part of the body would join the rest of the exposed flesh, and that person would be judged with nega, with the lesion of er basar, of the regular exposed skin, which is michya ufishin in the language of the parsha, it's called michya or pishin. There's two different signs. Michya means where there's in the middle of that white splotch, suddenly healthy skin appears, and pishin means where it became larger, where that area is expanding. Okay, so that makes sense. We got that. It's clear. Yesterday we established the difference between the areas of the body that are covered with hair and the areas of the body that don't have hair. Two kinds, nega and nesek. That Machlokes Rashi and Rambam, if it's two entirely different sorts of tzoras, or they're along the same continuum, but a little bit different. Now there's other signs as well. And today we're learning that the person who goes bald, that area of baldness would be considered like the rest of the skin. It's not the head or the beard area per se. It's the fact that there would be hair, and if there's no longer hair there, it's no longer considered to be Reish and Zakon. Okay, so just to augment this a little bit, I wanna make it clear to you, like from both Ramban and Rambam say, that nesek means when hair falls out. But that's only if there's hair and hair falls out. But if we're talking about a person who's the entire area of the head is cleansed of hair, which could be karachas or gabachas. Karachas means unnatural baldness where the hair falls out of the back. Gabachas means it falls out of the front. Then in that case, there's no longer applicable. The Rash in Meseches Negoyim and the Mishnah says as follows, that the nesek means the hair falls out, and that the hair falling out is actually a sign of tzaras. Because when the hair falls out, the hair can grow back. But when a person is bald, that means by nature, the skin has changed. Yes.
That makes sense, because we just told that nesek means actually a different kind of avera. Does that mean the person whose hair's falls out can't get that kind of avera, or that he just can't get the warning for that avera on his head?
That's a really interesting question. That you're asking, does it mean, according to what we said yesterday, that the nesek, which is only applicable because of a unique kind of avera, which like we said is arrogance, could that even apply? So I'm going to tell you something interesting that bald people like to hear. The Moir V'Shemesh writes that baldness is a sign of achieving some kind of holiness. In other words, if you went bald, that you can't have that certain level of gaiva anymore. But that would not apply today, because none of this applies today. Once upon a time, when it would apply, that's when we could say this. Which is a little bit difficult to wrap our heads around, because we would say, after all, that baldness is just a genetic thing. Some people say I fall earlier, some people don't. Although, I have to tell you that the Rebbe Rashab, the The fifth Rebbe said he went bald at a very young age. I think he was like late teens. He's ready. His hair started falling out. He said, and I quote, "The hair is em aruz gikrachem von kop von haravanya and tanya," that the hair literally fell out of his head from his toil in tanya. And I don't know how that works with the science of baldness. And the Schneersons, we usually bald at a very early age. The Rebbe was bald very early. We have pictures already in his early 20s that he was bald. So there was clearly a genetic baldness over there, a genetic baldness marker. But nonetheless, the Rebbe Rashab said that. He said, the heart is a marish kraf of a cup. So I don't know what that means. Like I said, the Marav Hashemesh reads into this. And he says that there's this, there's some kind of a possibility that's no longer available. But again, none of this really is able to be applied to any of us on a literal level. Why does it say v'ish? This whole business says a man. It doesn't say, before it said isha, isha, man or woman, and it talked about hair and beard. Here, when it talks about undoing this, it says only about an ish. So the Ibn Ezra says that, generally speaking, women don't go bald. It's a male thing. It doesn't mean women can't go bald, but usually women don't go bald. And he uses terminology which I'm not sure we understand today, but he talks about certain moisture or hydration, and he says that because a woman's skin is more hydrated, that's why there wouldn't be baldness. I don't know what that means, and I'm not sure how that squares with what we know today scientifically, but that's the Ibn Ezra says. So let's take a look here in verse 41, and then we'll come back and analyze this very carefully and see what kind of lessons we can learn from these lesions or lack of lesions. V'imipas pon of yimaret. What if the baldness comes on at the temples, the side of his head, or the crown? So then gibechu, then he's a gibech, and again, toiru. So what are we talking about? Rashi told us. Toiru doesn't mean he's pure, doesn't mean he can have tzaras. Excuse me, it means he can have nisokim, the nesek, the tzaras, which is unique to the area which will be covered with hair, will no longer apply. Now we take a look at verse 42, and it says, "V'chiyiye bekarachas oy begabachas." When you'll have in the karachas, karachas is the person who has the unnatural baldness, the back of his head. Oy begabachas, the person who has the natural baldness, the crown of his head, the temples. So if there'll be a nega lovon, if there'll be an lesion of whiteness, a white that appears to look very white, a deep white, or it's a damdim, that it's tinged with red, you should know, tzara'as pirachasi, it is a tzara'as that is spreading, bekarachtoi, oy begabachtoi, on the area of baldness, whether it's the front baldness, or posterior baldness, or anterior baldness. Right, so that will be, so in the area of baldness, when it suddenly appears white, yes, that is tzara'as. That is tzaras, and you don't need to have any hair falling out, and you don't need to have that golden or reddish green hair, and so on and so forth. Now, here's the interesting thing. Can a bald area be stricken with tzaras? Yes? Yeah. What kind of tzaras? Negoyim, right? The regular skin kind. How do we know this? How do we know that the area that was once covered with hair, which used to be susceptible to netek, can be stricken with saras, which is called nega? How do we know it? This is not a trick question. Think carefully. We just read three verses. Verse 40, it says, the person who goes anterior baldness, we said that person is going to be toher, it's going to be pure. We said the person who goes posterior baldness is going to be tar, it's going to be pure. That was verse 40 and verse 41. Verse 42, it says, and so in the karachas or gebachas and the posterior baldness or anterior baldness, if there will be a negalovan, if there will be a lesion that's white, and adamdem, it's tinged with red, tzaras perachasi, it is tzaras. Verse 41, it says, tar, pure. Verse 42, it says, tar, which means pure. So verse 40 and 41 say that the netek, does not apply. Doesn't say a nega applies, just says a netek doesn't apply. It says toiru. Verse 42 tells us, I'm getting an echo there. Verse 42 tells us that a nesek would not apply, but a nega would apply. I'm trying not to confuse you. It's very simple. In verse, yesterday we learned that there's a difference between the exposed flesh and the area which is covered with hair. The exposed flesh, saras, is called nega. The covered area is called nesek, as we learned yesterday. Today we're learning that if a person goes bald, if there's an area which is usually covered with hair, the netek business that we learned about yesterday does not apply. Where does it say that? In verse 40 it says it. It says, tahirhu. Tahirhu means he is pure. And then in verse 41 it says, we talk about posterior baldness, and we say in that area of posterior baldness is tahirhu, which means pure. Doesn't say of what, it says pure. In verse 42 it says, and if in that area that has become stripped of hair, suddenly a lesion would appear, what would that lesion be telling us? That it's a sign of impurity, that is a nega. So I'm going to go back to my first question. Where does it say, in which pasuk does it say, that if somebody were to get a normative tzaras appearance, a normative lesion, in which pasuk does it say that that person would be deemed ritually impure? 42. Yes? 42. Okay, so open up now the Biur HaChumash, and let's listen to this. Page Kuf Tzadik. The Rebbe here quotes the Toiras Kohanim. The Toiras Kohanim is the Medrash Halacha that accompanies the third book of the Torah, which is also known as Chumash Vayikra, or Torah at Kohanim, the Torah of Kohanim, called Leviticus. Talks about the Kohanim. Activities of Kohanim, temple activities, Beis Hamikdash activities, and so on and so forth. So in the Toiras Kohanim, which is the Sifra, it says, Nilmedes halacha zu, we learn this halacha, that a person can become ritually impure with tzaras when a regular lesion appears. We learn it from verse 42. That's where we learn it from. But when we sat down to learn today, we studied verse 40, and then we studied along with that the accompanying commentary of Rashi. And what did Rashi tell us on verse 40? He says, tahirhu does not mean that this person is no longer susceptible to the lesions called tzaras. We said that this person is not susceptible to the nesek, but is susceptible to the nega. So the Rebbe asks, where did Rashi get that from? We don't know that yet. Rashi's comment is appearing prematurely. Rashi's comment should only appear in verse 42, where it actually says it in the Torah. In verse 41, it doesn't say it. In verse 40, it doesn't say it. So why would Rashi jump the gun? You understand the question? I know this seems very arcane to you. I understand. This is totally like outer space. I get it. Okay. But it's the Torah, so it's not outer space. It's our Torah. Rashi, my Torah, Torah, your Torah. I understand that. Rashi knew the whole Torah. Oh, exactly. Rashi's going to comment now if something troubles him. If the issue is not an issue, if it's not learned at this point, when it comes, we'll deal with it when it comes. We're having enough tzaras with this tzaras. Why preempt it? Right? Why do you got to talk about it in verse 40? In verse 42, you'll talk about it where it appears. That's where afterward our sages talked about it. That's the commentary in the Teres Koyanim. So this is a question. It's a question. And I don't know of another answer, but this is where the Rebbe answered it. The Yeshleimer. Sherashi atzmi mavir es ahechrech lepidush beemtsoyis hatokas hamilim kereachu. Rashi answers the question that you would ask by also transcribing the words kereachu. So Rashi not only comments, not only he annotates the Torah, he also transcribed which words he's annotating. Sometimes Rashi will say one word of the pasuk and write v'goymer, which means etc. And then you know that the whole pasuk is difficult, that the commentary or annotation applies to the entire verse because it says etc. Sometimes Rashi will take two words and transcribe those two words and annotate those two words or three words. Here in this particular comment, when Rashi wants to say something about in verse 41, he transcribes the words kereachu toheru. He's a kereach, he is toher. But really, what Rashi's explaining is the words toheru. Toheru could mean exempt, pure. Tzaras is no longer applicable. Or toheru could mean it's no longer applicable in the realm of nesek, but it is applicable in the realm of nega. Rashi chose to transcribe not two words here, but rather four words here. He said kereachu toheru. He's really only explaining the words toheru. He is pure. So milim elu, these words, says the Rebbe, nira islicha ayra ki miuteres lachalutin. They seem entirely superfluous and unnecessary. Shaharehei ehein einam milamedes davar. They don't teach us anything. It's a matter of fact. There's no, Rashi's not annotating anything. Dai haya, it would be enough if you would say, v'ishki mardreishay toiru. The truth is, the words kerech are irrelevant. Why do we have to give one kind of baldia one name and another baldia another name? Oh, you have anterior baldness. Okay, you're a kerech. You have posterior baldness. You are a gibeach. Interestingly, in English, we have the same. We have two terminologies also. Baldness, but posterior baldness and anterior baldness. And people who struggle with baldness or try to overcome baldness or give up and just be bald. But we have two different names for it. Why do you need two names for it? What's the difference? What's the difference if it's posterior baldness or anterior baldness? Baldness is baldness. Baldness means there used to be a place with hair, and now the hair fell out. And when the hair falls out, it generally does not grow back. End of story. Bad news for the bald people, but that's how it is. Why even mention those words? The Torah here is not giving us commentary on hairstylists or people's frustration at losing their hair. The ishki marit reishay, a person when his head was bald, toiru. Toiru. You go bald, your head is stripped of hair, toiru. Which part is toiru? The whole head? No, the area that went bald. Do I care if it was posterior baldness or anterior baldness? Why do we need the words kereach? Why do I have to call them a kereach or a gibeach? Umin ahechrech leimer, therefore, it must be that the words kereachu are coming to explain something. In other words, those words are coming to, in some way, elucidate the concept of the siba, the reason for this person's purity. For the person whose head has been stripped of hair. In other words, as if to say, since that person has now moved into the new designation of being Mr. Kereach, as Mr. Kereach, his head is no longer considered a place of hair. Now his head is considered bald. Therefore, he can no longer be deemed ritually impure with the tuma of what's called nisakim, only with nigaim. But nisakim, which is this area, which is this method of ritual impurity of tzaras, which applies to the area that's covered with hair, would no longer apply here. Why? Because the person now is a different kind of person. Something has changed. As a halachic designation has changed, he went from being a regular person to a kerech person. And that actually becomes the foundation for a distinction, a different approach between the shita of Rashi, which is what's called derech hapshat. Rashi is trying to explain the words on a literal level. And the Teres Koyanim, is, as I said, is called Medrash Halacha. Medrash Halacha is expounding halachas. The Teres Koyanim's job and mandate, its focus is halacha. Because you can't learn halacha from the Chumash. So the Medrash Koyanim comes, it restates the entire Torah orally, restates the whole Vayikra in the terminology, in the syntax of halacha. You read psukim, you're getting verses, you're getting scriptural, biblical syntax. You read Teres Koyanim, you're getting halachic syntax. After all, that's what the Mishnah is. The Mishnah is the oral restatement of the Torah ideas in halachic terminology. What is a Mishnah? Every Mishnah follows the same matrix. Case, halacha. Sometimes two halachas. Sometimes three halachas. Sometimes a dispute and opinion about halacha. But every Mishnah follows that matrix. We introduce a case. Here's the example. Here's the ruling. Here's the example. Here's the ruling. The Mishnah contains no commentary. The Mishnah gives us no poetry. The Mishnah gives us no philosophy. The Mishnah gives us no history. For example, Pesach comes along. The Mishnah doesn't talk about slavery, doesn't talk about the Pharaoh, doesn't talk about Moses, doesn't talk about plagues. You know what the Mishnah talks about? The Mishnah talks about what should I do? Here's the case. It's the night before Pesach, Erla Ba'asar. What should I do? I should search for chametz, halacha. Then the next Mishnah will come and tell me, it's the morning of Pesach, what should I do? Get rid of the chametz. It's a halacha. Why are we doing this? Read the Chumash. Don't come to Mishnah and expect the Mishnah to give you the whole song and dance, to give you the whole narrative. That's not what Mishnah is about. And Teres Koyanim is the same way. When we read the Chumash, v'chi, when this happens or that happens, even though these psukim are kind of halachic, they're quasi halachic, there's no stories, there's no narratives in Chumash Vayikra. But nonetheless, it's in the syntax and a framework of scripture. Medrash Halacha is a restatement. It's just in the cases of halacha. But Rashi explains the scripture, so to speak, literally, straightforwardly. So therefore, Shitas Rashi, who the opinion of Rashi is, that nigei ur basar, v'nigei mekoyim seyar, that the lesions This is what we learned yesterday. It's a continuation of yesterday. The lesions of the exposed skin and the lesions of the area where there's hair, what did we learn from Rashi? Not the opinion of Rambam. The opinion of Rashi is that they are along the same continuum. They are basically the same. It's all the same. Ella, but, kishanega mefia, but ergoli, when the lesion appears, an exposed skin, then there is one set of telltale signs. When it comes in covered area, so then the area that's covered with hair, there's different telltale signs. The tuma, the idea is essentially the same. According to Rashi, nega and nesek are not really different. Nega and nesek are different ways of telling the same thing. Nega and nesek are just two different names for the same condition, which is known in Hebrew as tzoras. Tzoras can be nega, tzoras can be nesek. Two different names, two different signs for the same, all roads lead to the same place. They're all going in the same direction. So if so, vim kein, mi'acha sha'akosu v'landenu. Once the verse teaches us, sh'makoyim ha'kereach, ha'karachas, pardon me, once we say that the person who lost his hair, his designation changes. He is no longer considered to be a hair covered person. Instead, now he is an exposed head person. He's a kereach. He's got a new name. So move and mail of it, self understood. If the lesion would appear in this place, self understood that there'll be an idea of tzaras. Obviously, then that's going to be the case. We're going back to the way it was before because it never really changed. We just go to the same telltale signs. But according to Rashi, it's the same continuum. All the sins of Tzaras are ultimately the same. The same idea. The arrogance and the negative talk, it's all the same. It's all about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It comes because of a deficiency in our interpersonal relationship. We're not behaving appropriately with others. We think we're better than others. We talk badly about others. Some people just think that they're fantastic and amazing and everybody should be revolving around them because they are the geocentric reality and the star of Earth, and that's a problem. And other people think they're not really such a star, but if everybody else in the black holes, they'll be a star. So they slander everybody and talk badly about everybody. It's the same thing. It's different dimensions of the same condition. The condition is a person who can't get along with others. The condition is a person who needs to become greater than others in order to feel satisfied. It's a mild form of mental illness, but I don't want to use the word mental illness because then a person is exonerated. And we're talking here about a negative trait. Mental illness, a person is not well, Nebuch. So what do you want? You're not well. You're behaving not well. You could change this. So to be an egomaniac is a problem. And in egomaniacalism, if there's such a word, would express itself in two ways. One is, I'm just amazing. I can't get over how great I am. Tzaras. Hello? What's with you? What are you behaving like this for? Or the person says, I'm not so great, but everybody else, they stink. They're horrible. You're bad, and you're bad. Everybody's bad. I got something to say about everybody. When I finish shooting everybody else down, who's the only one left standing? Almighty me. Okay, great. So then I'm still fantastic, even though I'm really not so fantastic. But listen, relatively speaking, in my theory of relativity, everybody is so bad that I got to come out fantastic anyway. Now, according to Rashi, it's all one thing. It's all one thing. And therefore, Nesek, Nega, it's not really different. But according to the Shita of the Medrash, which is the Shita of Rambam, we're talking here about two different things. We're talking here about one kind of person's issue. He has an issue interpersonal issues. Interpersonal issues, that's Negoyim. And then there's a person who ends up, he's from his interpersonal issues, it devolves into his relationship with God. Now his arrogance is not just that he's better than everybody else, he's better than God too. Wait, God's going to tell him what to do? Who do the prophets think they are? Do they know what he has to say? And God is now going to be telling me how to run my life? I'll tell God how to run the world. Which is, as Rambam explained, that it's a slippery slope. From not getting along with others, says the Rambam, from putting others down, eventually, you put the rabbis, the sages, the prophets, and eventually God. So according to that, we have a different issue over here. When a person is no longer capable of Nesek, he's missing that hair over there, all of a sudden, maybe this condition has all of a sudden become limited. And therefore, Nitin Limud HaMilim Kerechu, Toiru, we can only learn this later on when the Torah clearly, specifically says that this person maybe is not susceptible to Netek, but he is still susceptible to Nega. And this kind of follows maybe what the Mor of Hashemesh says, that boldness is a sign of some kind of inner transformation. At least he's not fighting with God. You know, the person thinks he's better than everybody else, at least doesn't think he's God anymore. We used to think he was God, it was really bad. Now he doesn't think he's God. He accepts God, or the prophets will accept, but anybody who's not a prophet, I have nothing to do with. Anyway, so we can see, this is a legion of lessons. Some lessons we could learn from this arcane, ancient condition, which is our Torah, and it's this week's Torah portion, and therefore it behooves us, since we don't actually deal with this, at least when we study about it, and we try to learn lessons from it, then this becomes dynamic and real for us in our lives today, and we fulfill not only the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, now the mitzvah of academically studying the ideas of Torah, but also we are able to, so to speak, download these notions and these ethos into our daily life in a way that will make the way we live better, more holy, more righteous, and bring us closer to Hashem and to our fellow people. And on that note, l'chaim. Thank you.